Der US-Amerikaner Alan Francis ist emeritierter Professor für Psychiatrie. Er ist Mitautor einiger Diagnosehandbücher, aber großer Kritiker des fünften Handbuchs, des DSM-5 oder auf Englisch eben DSM-5. Ich habe bei ihm nachgefragt, wird in Zukunft also jemand, der innerhalb von 2 Monaten nach dem Tod eines geliebten Menschen immer noch traurig ist und morgens nicht aufstehen mag oder schon mal weint, ob der also als depressiv diagnostiziert wird. Auf Englisch: A person who has just lost a loved one and is sad, doesn't want to get up in the morning, breaks out in tears once in a while, will he or she now be diagnosed with a major depression?
I think that this is one of the worst ideas in DSM-5, and it's certainly aroused a great deal of opposition. If you've lost the love of your life and 2 weeks later you're feeling sad with less interest, appetite, sleep difficulties, loss of energy. In DSM-5, that becomes a mental disorder. And the drug salesman can try to convince the doctor that you need a medicine for that. Mammals love, and the price of love is to feel great pain when we lose the person we cared about. That's normal. The manual doesn't recognize the fact that many milder presentations of what looks like depression are really expectable reactions to the losses and the problems of life.
How does it work to apply the DSM? I mean, how do you come up with a diagnosis according to it? Is there like a checklist where you tick off different symptoms?
Yeah, this is necessary because in psychiatry we don't have biological tests. And the only way that you can get clinicians to agree on a diagnosis is to provide very, very clear definitions of it. That method is good. The problem with DSM-5 is that it stretches the system into normality, that people who have problems of everyday living are redefined as having a mental disorder. So I think the system is good, but it should be applied only when there's severe psychiatric illness that's clear-cut and causing definite impairment.
Now, both in your book, Normal, and in several articles, you've argued that there's a diagnostic inflation, that because of this manual, too many people are diagnosed as psychiatrically ill and start taking pills. But there are so many doctors and scientists that have worked on these kind of manuals for a very long time. Why would they be making up diagnoses?
I've been herding experts for 35 years working on the different DSMs, and I've never met an expert who said, my area should be narrowed. Every expert has an intellectual conflict of interest. They love their pet area of diagnosis. They want to expand it. They worry about missed patients. They like the idea of more research interest in their area. So experts will always expand their particular area. They need to be controlled. In DSM-3, we rejected 92 of 94 suggestions. We wanted to be conservative to try to avoid diagnostic inflation, and we failed. It's not just how the system is written. Equally important, maybe more important, is how the system is used. And the drug companies have enormous power to market to physicians and in the United States also directly to patients. The idea that psychiatric disorder is underdiagnosed, is easy to diagnose, is due to a chemical imbalance and requires a pill. So the loose diagnostic practice comes in part from how the diagnostic definitions are written, but even more how they're used under the powerful influence of the drug company huge marketing effort. 80% of psychiatric medicine is prescribed not by psychiatrists, but by other doctors, especially primary care physicians. Often after very brief contacts with the patient by doctors who don't have a great deal of expertise in psychiatry, and with, again, great drug company influence. So we need to be much more careful about diagnosis, much more selective in people who are given medication. If the situation isn't urgent, waiting is often the best policy
Let me get back to that diagnostic inflation, though, for a moment. In the DSM-4, I think it was, you were among those who turned shyness into a diagnosis, namely that of social phobia. Why did you do that?
Actually, that was done earlier in DSM-3, and this is a very good illustration of the problem. There are some people who are paralyzed by shyness, by social phobia, and it is so destructive of their life that in their case, it makes sense for it to be a diagnosis in the manual. But then it gets broadened in its usage to cover people who really have the normal everyday shyness that we can't expect to get rid of, nor should we, and it can't be treated by a pill. That the problem is that definitions that may work when the person presents with a severe problem get spread out to cover the normal population. Severe problems are rare. Shyness is very, very common. And so what the drug companies are successful in doing is blurring the boundary with normality. What we need to do is tighten up the diagnostic system so that it covers only the more severe conditions, and we need to stop drug company marketing.
Alan Francis, amerikanischer Psychiater und Autor des Buches Normal gegen die Inflation psychiatrischer Diagnosen. Er meint, zu viele Menschen werden für psychisch krank erklärt und entsprechend medikamentiert. Wir haben diese Sache mit der Diagnose Depression auch nochmal ausführlicher auseinandergenommen in einem Beitrag, auch der zu hören auf drradiowissen.de